The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1062. It's Wednesday, the 9th of May, 2018. By the way, our Business Live series podcast, we've just uploaded a new podcast and actually features Justin Urquhart-Stewart, interviewed by me, another Justin. I don't know if you know about Justin Urquhart-Stewart, but he started Seven Investment Management, and he's had a very interesting life, very varied as well. And it spans the vineyards of Europe to the docks of Southampton. And in fact, have a quick listen to this clip right now.
I had to resign from Barclays in 2000 because I really disagreed with the way they were running this business. They were running it for the benefit of themselves. They even managed to introduce an inactivity fee. So you get charged for doing something and you get charged for doing nothing. And you thought, this is outrageous. So that's where Tom and I then set off to go and set up Seven. So you turn around to your wife and family and say, look, darling, do you mind? Actually, we're going to have to put the house up on hock again, and we're going to have to start all over again. Remember all those lovely share option schemes that we had and things like that? Well, actually, we've just burnt them.
And if you want to listen to the rest of that, plus other people being interviewed, you know, who have sort of high-profile business careers, then just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, on the podcast today, Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals, HZM, and Jeremy discusses their initial mineral resource estimate for their recently acquired Vermelho Nickel Cobalt project, and also gives an update on their Araguaia project, which is about, 80 kilometres or 60 kilometres down the road. Also on the podcast, Andrew Pelayer, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources, VAST, and Andrew talks about their new non-executive director appointment and gives a summary on their quarterly production and operations. Plus, I also have Dr. Clifford Gross, Chairman and CEO of Tech Capital, TEK. And Clifford discusses their university technology commercialization program and goes through some of the highlights from their final results end of last week. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. That's HZM. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Good to speak to you. How are you?
Good, thanks. And I suppose you are quite sitting pretty there today because significant news on your Vermelho project. And we'll get to that in a bit. And the resource confirming significant nickel and cobalt. So before we get to that, Jeremy, for someone listening right now who's not familiar with Horizonte, can you explain in about a minute or less what you're all about, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So Horizonte is an AIM and Canadian-listed development company focused in Brazil. We've been active in the country now for over 8 years. We have potential mine number one, which is Araguaia. And that is a grassroots discovery that we made. We then consolidated it with two acquisitions, and the most recent being with Glencore. And that project is moving towards completion of a full feasibility study, and will be ready for construction next year. And based upon a nickel price of around $12,000 a ton, it will generate over $1 billion of cash flow over life of mine. And then late last year, we acquired potential mine number two, which is the Vermelho Nickel Cobalt project, which is within trucking distance of Araguaia. And that will also produce a significant downstream value of nickel and cobalt. So that's the overview of the company.
Yeah. And today you sort of announced initial NI 43101 mineral resource estimate for the Vermelho Nickel Cobalt project. Take us through the numbers here, because they seem quite impressive, Jerry.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, one of the reasons for us acquiring the project, we were looking around Araguaia and saying, is there any other assets within trucking distance that would add significant value to Horizonte? And we identified the Vermelho project as one of those potential opportunities. It was going to be developed by Vale. We believe they've spent over $200 million on it. It had a construction decision in 2005 and was going to be Vale's major nickel project. We acquired this late last year and closed the transaction in January. And today we released a 43101 compliant resource, which is giving you over 160 million tons at around a percent of nickel and 0.06% cobalt. And that places the Vermelho project as one of the highest grade scalable resources out there globally today that's not a producing mine. So yes, it's a very big step forwards for us.
Yeah, well, I sort of knocked up some rough figures on current prices. And of course, you know, a lot of things changed, dynamics changed here, but I came up with around about $30 billion of nickel and cobalt in the ground there. Is that right? Am I right?
I'm obviously not going to comment directly on those numbers, but yes, you can take current nickel prices of around $13,900 a tonne. Mm. Cobalt at $88,000 a ton, and you can do your own in situ calculations there. Obviously, you've got to take off the cost of production and capital, but it is a very significant resource, robust resource, and value driver for the company.
Yeah. So why did Vale sell it then? I mean, you've done two of what seems fantastic deals now, with Glencore, you know, for Araguaia, and Vermelho there from Vale. So why is it a case of basically just prioritizing at the time? Because I know the original project, Glencore, nickel was very unloved at the time, so you managed to get it, you know, steal that. But why here did you get such a good deal here, do you think?
I think in both cases it's the same model. We have been developing our asset base right at the bottom of the nickel market when there has been really very low investor interest. So in the case of the Glencore asset, there was $70 million of spend on that project. It was going to be Xstrata's next mine they built, and we acquired that late in 2016 when nickel prices were at 15-year lows. And in the case of Vermelho, we'd been on that transaction for over 18 months. And again, when we started with Vale, nickel prices were trading at 10 to 12-year lows. So it's about buying at the bottom of the market and adding value on the way up. Mm-hmm. And why did we or why we were able to negotiate this transaction with Vale, and why did they not build it? It's a very simple story. Vale were developing this. They gave it the go-ahead in 2005. They were going to spend $1.2 billion building a 40,000-ton-a-year nickel plant. And then in 2006, they spent $16 billion and acquired Canada's largest nickel company, Inco. Inco had producing sulfide mines up in Sudbury. It had ferronickel in Indonesia. And it had an identical project to Vermelho called Goro in New Caledonia. Goro was already under construction, so Vale focused their spend on that project, and as a result, Vermelho went back onto care and maintenance and sat on the pipeline. Vale has had a new CEO in. They realized there was synergies in putting this together with what we're doing. And you also have to look at the deal. Although we paid $8 million for the asset in stages, there is a royalty on the back end, so Vale will see upside on the royalty. So they're very much partnered to see value built on this asset. But either way, it's a fantastic transaction for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So what's next here at Vermelho?
So in terms of Vermelho, obviously acquisition closed in January. New mineral resource today. We'll be commencing test work to demonstrate that you can produce battery-grade nickel and cobalt sulfate. We aim to have that out mid-year, and then later this year we'll have a PEA stroke scoping study around the project to show that you can build a mid-sized nickel operation for a much lower capital cost than Vale we're looking at. So that's the sort of timeline, and also we will be advancing the permitting. And then moving on to Araguaia. Araguaia, the aim is to have the feasibility complete in mid-year, moving into Q3, fully permitted by the end of the year, so it's construction ready for 2019.
Wow, and yet you're sitting here with, like you said, two sort of world-class assets, and I did actually tweet this out saying there are very few companies around with not only one but two assets here, you know, in a world-class and with, you know, commodities in high demand that can be sitting at a market cap of 65 million. So you're in a very interesting position at the moment, aren't you?
I think it is. I mean, it's obviously frustrating from my point of view that we're not getting the full value that we believe we should be, but that's every CEO's dilemma. But I think if you just take Araguaia, essentially that value, that the 65 million market cap today, is really all driven around Araguaia. I've highlighted a previous transaction many a time here. And if you look back at the Kaneco Resources transaction, which was a project which is about 120 kilometers northwest of us in Brazil, developed by a Canadian junior, it's an analogous project to Araguaia, and it was acquired by Vale in 2005 for $850 million. So there are multiple value drivers still to come on Araguaia on its own. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at the peer group for nickel cobalt projects, principally driven out of Australia at the moment, the average market cap across that peer group is around 100 to 150 million. So we should be able to create that sort of value for Vermelho over the next 12 to 18 months as we put down those milestones. So I think either project or both projects combined have the potential to add multiples to the share price today. And we're doing this against a very favorable nickel and cobalt market going forwards.
Yeah, well, quickly, just go over that, because people may not be aware. I mean, what is the forecast there for, the profile for nickel and cobalt at the moment?
I think nickel, we're seeing a period now where we're seeing sustained demand. We're seeing the inventories globally drawn down. And if you look at any of the price forecasting groups over the next sort of 18, 24, 36 months, you're looking at pricing anywhere $14,000 up to $18,000 a ton. And cobalt, again, you're seeing supply side constraints coming out of the DRC, robust demand in the EV battery space. So again, we're seeing potential robust forecasting pricing for cobalt. So both metals looking good, and there are very few projects that will be construction ready in the time frame that we are to supply that market.
Marvellous. Well, Jeremy, if someone's listening to this and they very much like the sound of where you're at and what you're doing, but are not yet following you, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Number one, we have two very high quality projects in terms of high grade, scalable, flexible resources, all 100% owned by Horizonte. Number two, the company is well funded, a number of major milestones over the next 12 months with a solid shareholder base. And number three, both the nickel and cobalt markets are looking robust over the midterm as we lay down these milestones into that market. So I think for incoming shareholders, there are multiple value drivers around what we're doing going forwards.
Marvellous stuff, Jeremy. Good to chat to you, and hopefully be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Pelayer, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources. That's VAST. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Pleasure always.
And it seems like, I think a little over a week ago we spoke last, but in that time you've released two bits of significant news. We'll cover those in a bit. Before we do, Andrew, for people listening who are not familiar with the company, give them a brief summary as to what you're all about at Vast, please.
Certainly. Vast Resources was an exploration company formed in 2003, was listed in 2006, and now has grown into a producer in two jurisdictions. We're producing gold in Zimbabwe and polymetallics in Romania, with a hopefully rapid growth path into being a mid-tier mining company in the not-too-distant future.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so news out today, and we'll cover yesterday's news in a bit, but the appointment of non-executive director, and this is Nick Hatch. Tell us about Nick, then.
We decided to change the configuration of the board post the departure of our former CEO and another non-executive director. It was slightly imbalanced. We had three executive directors, only two non-execs. So we went for a hunt for a new non-executive. And what we're trying to do is fill the void on the board of expertise. So at the moment, we had once upon a time five accountants on our board. Now it's more balanced, with Craig Harvey coming on as our COO and chief geologist. We've got experience from our chairman, Mr. Brian Moritz, who's been a chairman of many AIM companies and understands mining. We've got our historical director, Roy Tucker, and myself as well, coming on the board this year. So we've decided to look at where we were filling, and now we're heading towards raising more debt finance. So I thought it was, let's say, prudent to get somebody who is an expert in the field. And coming from a geological background and a mining background, Nick, as well as in the banking sector, it lines up perfectly with what our vision is for the future. So he's going to fill that void and assist me in getting institutional investment on board.
Yeah, certainly seems to have a lot of experience there if you read this summary on the RNS, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. And, you know, we went through quite a few people before we decided on Nick, and he was the best fit for the company.
Marvellous. Okay, well, let's skip back a day to your quarterly production summary and operations update. And I do like your first line in the RNS there. You say, our focus during the recent months has been to ready ourselves for our next phase of growth. And this is the bit I like. And I see our last couple of quarters as the deep breath before we plunge into uncharted waters.
Ah, yes. The idea behind that quote was that, you know, we've been through a very difficult time over the last couple of years, that transition from exploration to producer. And now we've got two successful mines. Pixton is performing extremely well. Even though we had mining issues at the beginning of the year, it was a pre-planned mine from the start. So we had a significant stockpile in the event something like this did happen. And it proved to be effective. We had our best month ever. We had our best production of gold. The grade is increasing. And we want to replicate that in Mamaila, which is what we've undertaken, this stripping program. And now we're seeing the fruits of that labor coming out now. And with the new acquisitions and the continual growth path and further acquisitions coming up in the future, we're on for a very, very interesting ride ahead.
Yeah, and obviously you said that there, but do you feel that you are now aligning the company for, you know, heading in the direction it's supposed to be headed in?
Yeah, look, Pixton is forever growing. We're drilling shortly at Giant, so that'll be another gold project. They're on the ground now at Eureka, finding the best solution to getting that started in the most efficient way possible. So we're going to we're looking at producing at the moment. We're somewhere around the 60 kilos of gold a month. We want to get to to double, possibly triple that over the next 12 months with Eureka coming on board and Giant coming on board. So Zimbabwe is a very, very interesting target for the company with the new government in place, and the elections come up in July. So that on its own is going to be a spectacular business. Plus, with Manayila performing the way it is and the new plant being built, it'll be extremely profitable for the business. I believe Q2 will also be a profit center for Manayila, and Baita coming on board and other projects in Romania. It's going exactly where we anticipated it would, and hopefully at a faster rate than we could possibly have hoped for.
Yeah, and for people that have been sort of wary of investing in any company sort of related or active in Zimbabwe, would you say now that the new government is in, they are definitely sort of more business orientated?
Almost definitely. You can look, the government is promoting itself very well in the UK and in Europe and now in America. They are trying to attract foreign investment. They need foreign investment. They want to start generating jobs. I mean, there's 93% unemployment in Zimbabwe. They want to reverse that. And in order to do so, they do need people are coming to invest in the country. I was in Zimbabwe only 2 weeks ago. I'll probably be back there next week or the week after. And the mood is that they want to work with business to expand the economy. So it's a very, very positive vibe in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Andrew, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
We're highly undervalued. We're in production. We're producing cash. We're seeking alternatives constantly for expansion without dilution to shareholders on new projects. We have a very strong management team and a very, very strong board now. We believe we're on a rapid growth path where it's going to see great returns to shareholders. At this low price, I believe the company is extremely undervalued. And we're looking at a very, very bright future for Vast.
Marvellous stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin. Always a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Clifford Gross, Chairman and CEO of Tech Capital. That's T-E-K. Cliff, thanks for joining me again.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now that you've had two bits of news out, back end of last week, you had your final results out, and a lot of volume came through the stock because people sort of checked out your valuation compared to those final financial metrics there, and they're very impressed, I think. And also, you've had another bit of news of late university technology commercialization program. So we'll get into those two bits of news in a bit. Before we do, Cliff, for people not aware or not familiar with Tech Capital, could you summarize what the business is all about, please?
Yeah, in a nutshell, we provide a unique combination of IP investment services to create market value from university discoveries. So we acquire technology rights from universities around the world and seek to bring them to market. And we provide services to universities and corporates.
Okay, and to date, how many sort of products do you have, in the sort of commercial forum, as it were?
Well, we provide services to assess the market potential and to source new technologies. So there's two sort of general categories of services. Mm-hmm. And those services are provided to upwards of about 250 universities and a few large corporations around the world.
Okay. And as far as, products are concerned, how many, your portfolio there, you have quite a few out there already, don't you?
Yeah, we have a sort of a vibrant group of portfolio companies. Three of them are making particularly good progress, in our opinion. And those include Lucid, Solaris, and Belloscura. And we also have other portfolio companies that are in early stages that we're continuing to develop along and bring their technologies to market.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, well, let's go into the final results. Some of the highlights, if you could. Take us through what you perceive as the highlights, please, Cliff, if you could.
Yeah, sure. Well, basically, the revenue was at a record level of over $7 million, largely due to unrealized gains in our portfolio, but also due to increased services revenues, which are up about 25% year over year. Our profitability went from a loss of last year to over $4 million in this recent year. And our net assets went from a little over $3 million in 2016 to over $10.5 million for 2017. So it was a bang-up report for us, and it really showed that we're starting to make some good progress from the programs that we have developed.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out that when your net assets at year-end at $10.6 million. Now, the market cap of your company is around about £8 million. So you can see the value of their creation there. And so, at the moment, I did see a video recently at an event on your company, and it did do a comparison with peers, sort of similar sort of companies. But, their valuations are multiples of yours, Cliff. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think they've done a good job over time, the other companies in our space, in terms of commercializing university discoveries. And that's why they are where they are, because of their own performance. We are the youngest and smallest company in the IP commercialization sector. But our compound annual growth rate, our CAGR, of our net assets is higher than anyone else in the sector. And so we think we have certain competitive advantages. Namely, we have a larger network of university suppliers than all of our competitors put together. And that helps mitigate adverse selection. Doesn't guarantee you find something worthwhile, but it increases the likelihood that you will. Also, we source technologies that are ready for commercialization or near ready for commercialization, so we don't have such a long lead time to bring them to market. We think that's very useful in terms of optimizing returns on invested capital.
Yeah.
The other thing that we are able to do is we have a deep science advisory council. We have over 60 scientists, which are experts in different vertical areas, that help us do first-rate due diligence at a very low cost, and we think that's a competitive advantage. And then we have our own service group where we can assess the market potential of technologies quickly and inexpensively. And that also adds to our competitive advantage. And finally, by providing services to more than 200 universities and a number of large corporates, we keep close to the technology supplier market, and we also reduce our operating expenses, which in the sector is a competitive advantage. So we think we stack up well. We're a younger, smaller company than anyone else in the sector. But that being said, we believe we're punching above our weight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go into another bit of news from you of late, and that's you've been sponsored by Chilean government agency to deliver university technology commercialization program. Can you take us through the details of this, please, Cliff, if you could?
Yeah, in the last year, we've expanded our technology IP services group to Latin America, and we've been getting some good traction. And a part of our 25% year-over-year revenue increase in our services group is attributable to the growth of our Latin American business. And recently, we won a contract with Corfu, which is the Chilean agency responsible for entrepreneurship, innovation, and competitiveness. And they have assembled 13 universities and two research centers to receive training from us in the commercialization of university discoveries. And what's nice about that, aside from, you know, winning that piece of business, is each of those institutions, 15 of them, will receive IE reports and our software. And so we believe they could become good repeat customers for our services and capabilities over time. So it has a multiplier effect in our mind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And sort of go back to, because I mean, in those results, what wasn't mentioned, I suppose, or couldn't be accounted for, because it's post-period end, was Lucid. And the amount you raised for that via blockchain, sort of ICO kind of thing, style raise, which is non-dilutive. And that was quite impressive. And can you tell us what's going on with that now? And in fact, for people not aware of Lucid, can you just give a brief summary as to what it is?
Yeah, Lucid was a company that we established in September of 2017 to commercialize a portfolio of intellectual properties we licensed that improve the functionality of augmented reality glasses. Mm. And so we did a token generation event to raise contributions to fund the development of these glasses. And we closed the token generation. We started the token generation event in October. We closed it out by February. And there were over $6 million in contributions, and Lucid is developing these glasses. So Lucid is also developing an optic shop online, which will be how the glasses will be sold when they're available. And we will be selling other high-end, sort of advanced eyewear, prescription eyewear, through this online optics shop as well. And then the optic shop will accept traditional and cryptocurrencies, which will be a first in the space. So Lucid is off to the races. They're doing their development program. They're expected to have their first pair of prototype augmented reality glasses in March of 2019. But long before that, they will have the optic shop up and running with other interesting products that will be available to token holders and others around the world.
Yeah, and I suppose most people will be sort of, you know, aware of this type of, you know, technology when Google Glass tried it, but yours is a lot more advanced now, isn't it? I was reading that apparently theirs was only in one screen, wasn't it, on one eye? Is that right?
Yeah, we think Google Glass was a remarkable product, and it showed the world that it was possible to have, you know, an enhanced visual field of information on top of what you're normally seeing. And of course, it was an early stage product, and it still exists. They resuscitated that business, and they provide the technology for commercial customers. And there are many other companies that are getting involved in the augmented reality space. There are at least 25 companies making products, but our goal was to have a product that was easy to use and more like normal glasses. And so that's what we're focused on.
Yeah. Oh, so there is. I mean, like,
it's an exciting space.
Yeah, it's an exciting space, because some people think when there's lots of people getting involved in a space, then it's too much competition. But that validates the market, doesn't it? It means there is demand for that.
Yeah, well, it's almost biological, the demand, because about half of the cerebral cortex is dedicated to processing visual information. So people want more information. They want to see additional information about what they're looking at. And so it's a huge market, and there isn't really a successful product out there. There are products out there with unique features that are, some of which are remarkable, But by successful, I mean there isn't a mass market successful product yet. So the field, we think, is still wide open.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Cliff, if someone's listening to this right now and likes the sound of tech capital, but they're not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, right off the bat, I could say we have the largest network of university suppliers in the world showing us new technologies available for acquisition. We've created, in a short period of time, a compelling portfolio of companies to commercialize several of these technologies. We've acquired roughly 60 patents over the last 2.5 years. And so we've acquired these patents and we've set up portfolio companies to commercialize them. And several of the portfolio companies, we believe, are making really good progress. And I guess third is our service business is growing. It's growing around 25% year over year. And we think that's a unique business in the space, in that it keeps us close to universities and corporates around the world, and it also reduces our operating costs, which is very important for university technology commercialization enterprises. So all in, we think we have a quite an interesting business and very good prospects going forward.
Absolutely. Cliff, good to chat to you, and hopefully be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Oh, you bet, Justin. Thank you for your interest. Take care.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At 5, Ascent Resources, AST. At 4, Horizonte Minerals, HLM, spoke to Jeremy earlier. At 3, Rehoboth Resources, RBD. At 2, Cora Gold, that's C-O-R-A. I don't know why I said Cora, C-O-R-A. I wrote a blog at those the weekend. Genuinely, I think, worth having a read. Of course, I wrote it, put some time and effort into it. But have a read. Very interesting company. And number one most followed company was Faron Pharmaceuticals. Had a massive fall yesterday, F-A-R-N. In fact, I wonder where they are today. I mean, it's a case of people were trying to, you know, catch a falling knife there. So they dropped by 85% on the failure of a Phase 3 trial. They're up 6.73%. Not a massive rise, but they did spike down yesterday. So if people caught in low, they may have made a profit. It's not a strategy I enjoy chasing. Okay, top five most popular RNSs are as follows. At 5, Echo Energy. Drilling commences on first exploration well. At 4, Greatland Gold. Ernest Giles, mobile metal, iron sampling results. At 4, N4 Pharma, filing of patent. At 2, Vast Resources, appointment of non-executive director. I talked, of course, to Andrew about that. And number one, most liked RNS, of course, Jeremy was on the podcast, it's Vermelho Mineral Resource. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.